some people at the MPI. It's going to be about matter inflation and how you could embed it into heterotic string theory. I first start with a very, very brief introduction into inflation in principle. So the reason why you do it is because you find, if you try to do standard big bang cosmology, you find a couple of problems with the measurement of the CMB. This is the WMAP 7-year sky map of the temperature for the full sky. And I think the most important problem is the so-called horizon problem, namely that the temperature is almost uniform about the entire sky, even in regions which normally could never have been in causal contact. And inflation is a way to solve this by postulating ad hoc a phase of a very rapid exponential expansion in the early universe. Plus, you can also, in addition to solving the horizon problem, for example, and explain why we observe no spatial curvature at all, it also provides a nice way to explain these tiny structures in the CMB by quantum fluctuations of some field. And the reason why this works is typically you need a scalar field to realize inflation, because what you want the space-time to look like is approximately the sitter. And the expansion rate is then given, set by the scale of the potential of the scalar field. And to support sufficiently long phase of inflation, which is necessary to comply with observations, the potential has to satisfy two conditions. The most severe one is the right one, which basically constrains the mass of the inflaton field phi in units of the expansion rate to be sufficiently smaller than one. So below this is a typical potential, how this would look like. And the point is that inflation has to last sufficiently long means that you have a really sufficient a kind of long stretch region in field space where the potential is approximately flat. And this makes the potential quite fine-tuned. And this shows up at a technical level. Hockey stick, okay. Okay, to be careful. The reason is why this shows up technically is if you do an effective field theory approach, you would say I have to add all dimension four operator, all types of the corrections to this potential. In particular, I could add any dimension four operator times phi squared. And this operator typically can have an expectation value of the order of the vacuum energy. And then you can see that even if this is a Planck-suppressed operator, so coming from quantum gravity corrections, you typically get large corrections to eta. You principally have to take those into account. And the prime example for this to happen is if you consider F-time-driven inflation in supergravity, which is what we will do. And then you can show quite easily that the main source of this problem is the e to the k prefactor. Because if you assume that one field gets an F-term coming from this first piece here, and take a very naive expansion of around some origin in field space with one inflaton field and one field which gets an F-term, and then generically what you end up is a contribution in the potential if you expand it for small phi, which looks like this. And these the terms and the dots depend on the structure of the smooth potential. But so it's immediate here from this potential that the mass of the inflaton is going to be of the order of the vacuum energy, so eta is order one. And the only way to solve this, two ways to solve this, is either you can fine-tune against the dots, or you impose some symmetry, which should help you get rid of the e to the k prefactor, essentially, to make it inflaton independent. So one way how this works with fine-tuning, essentially, is the most minimal model you can write down. So F-term hybrid inflation. It involves two fields, just two fields. One field H, which is so-called waterfall field, whose role is simply to end inflation at some point. And the inflaton field has itself drives the vacuum energy also, because it gets an F-term. And if you assume during inflation, the field H is kept at zero. So inflation proceeds in the region where the potential is somewhere here, where H is fixed at zero and phi is almost flat. And accidentally in this model, at three level, the phi squared term, the mass term cancels completely. And then you can show that there is a region in parameter space where is potentially dominated by the one-loop corrections on the common one-back potential. And the nice thing about this general class of hybrid models is that they, in principle, work with small field values, which is nice from an effective field theory point of view. But what is not so nice about this particular model is that the implicit assumption is that there are no further terms in the Kähler potential. In particular, no phi to the force term, and you can show that if you add such a term, the constant eta is small immediately means that this coefficient C has to be smaller than 10 to the minus 2, because that's the value of eta we essentially observe. So what we really want to do is solve the eta problem by a special form of the Kähler potential. And this means that you have to necessarily fulfill this condition on the superpotential, which you can show. So in particular, the inflaton necessarily cannot be the field which gets trapped in the vacuum energy during inflation. And we want inflation to end via the hybrid mechanism. So at some critical value of the inflaton field, a tachyonic direction must appear. And then you can check what is the simplest superpotential you can write down. And then it has to be of this form, where the standard supersymmetric hybrid inflation model is simply considering here just phi, linear, such a phi h squared term. But in principle, the model also works if you put some monomial in phi, like phi to the n. And during inflation, so the field which gets an f term is we fix at zero during inflation, in addition. Here, and I'll show you later how this is done. So for the Kähler potential, in principle, they have two choices. The usual conventional choice is to use a shift symmetry, which protects the imaginary part, which is what is mostly done in the literature. But what we will use is an alternative, which has been termed Heisenberg symmetry by a bunch of people, and first applied in the context of inflation in some of these papers. And it's a symmetry which involves two fields. So you need not only the inflaton phi, but also an additional field T, which itself has a shift symmetry independently of phi. And phi has a shift symmetry essentially for both its real and imaginary part, up to a transformation of also that field T. And the invariant combination that is symmetry is precisely this combination. And the Kähler potential which you can look at are of this form, which then also fall into the class of no-scale models typically. So before I tell you what meta-inflation is, I probably give you a brief motivation why we're interested in that. So the idea is to really provide a really direct link between particle physics and inflation.
So the phrase is, can you go back to really fast?
Yeah?
I forgot who the emphasis on
is. Phi. Phi is the emphasis. T will be an additional modulus field.
So restricted to the emphasis is still a shift symmetry.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're mixing it with other things.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Two
yeah.
And what is the alpha by? The shift is beta.
Yeah. This is an additional symmetry. This is two. You have two generators in the symmetry.
What's the second generator doing for you?
It's basically protects the imaginary part of T.
So if I restricted myself only to the thing generated by beta. And I wrote that the
most general Kähler potential
is what you're going to tell me not
going to
work in that case?
Hmm?
Would that
be
enough to protect the flatness of the
infinite
potential, or is it?
Yeah. No. What we need is only the second part, but the first one comes automatically in the examples you look at.
Because
it just ends up to be in this combination typically. And as you can see from this transformation here, these two are not really independent. So we have some non-trivial algebra between the two transformations. And so for a fixed value of phi, this is also some shift to the imaginary part of T to some extent. Okay. So the motivation is we want to establish a really direct link between particle physics and inflation. And that is what I mean by this is we want to establish a connection between the couplings which determine the inflaton potential and relate these to some other things which you can in principle observe from particle physics point of view. So for example, what is interesting is that typically if you want to fit observations, the VEF which the waterfall field gets at the end of inflation is of the order of the gut scale. So You might ask the question, can I link the hybrid phase transition to end inflation with the breaking of a gut symmetry in the NSSM, for example? Or more directly, you could place the inflaton in the visible sector, and the one, except from the Higgs, one nice candidate is the right-handed neutrino, because then you can directly relate the end of inflation with leptogenesis. Because under some not too severe assumptions, you can show that most of the right-handed neutrinos actually decay into right-handed neutrinos, and you immediately get a starting point for leptogenesis. And in a supersymmetric theory, those two, the couplings of the two will be related, so you can in principle constrain properties of the inflaton potential by some experiment which is not related to CMB or large-scale structure. And what I've been personally nice is that the basic idea is to get extra constraints on the inflaton potential, which you couldn't get in another way. And I think a prime example for this is the most naive thing, if you look at the Zenon model, is to use the Higgs Zenon model Higgs as an inflaton field. But you can quite easily show that if it's minimally coupled, but as in the standard setup, then you cannot have both fit the CMB observations and the electric symmetry breaking at the same point because of the constraint on the quartic Higgs coupling. Okay. So now, if you take together the Heisenberg symmetry and this particular structure of the superpotential, then you can write down a model which looks like this, where now H and phi are both get a partner which is in the complex conjugate representation, but everything else works essentially the same as before. We consider a Kähler potential of the following form, at this point the symmetry is exact by assumption, and this particular term here will ensure that X is zero during inflation and gets stabilized at a large mass. And the Heisenberg symmetry is now extended to involve two fields instead of just one. But in principle, it works the same. And the D-flat trajectory is now along a direction which, depending on what precisely you're looking at, but it relates phi and its complex conjugate in some way, just that such a one direction remains. And it has been shown by some of my collaborators and these people here. That this framework allows you to nicely embed neutrino inflation into both a Patti-Salan type model and an SO10 model, gut model in a 40s SUSY guts. And then precisely then you can have this also nice constraints on leptogenesis.
So the statement of the symmetry is that K is a function of rho only, and that's the symmetry?
Yeah.
So is the success of your weighted outside
amount? Yeah.
Do you have to? Is there anything special about the coefficients in the rest of these terms, or things you haven't written down?
No. It depends on. I think, for example, typically this coefficient here, I think typically has to be kind of small to avoid a large production of cosmic strings at the hybrid phase transition. But it doesn't really enter into the.
I was thinking about the 80 problem specifically. So
yeah. Okay.
If I tried to add something which was. It's down by some Planck scale.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what I have to add here, but but there's a whole bunch of things, choices you're making for these coefficients,
For these coefficients here.
Yeah.
These coefficients don't really matter. As long as they're not taking extreme values, I think.
So
I mean, have, I mean,
they,
okay.
They might have to be adjusted to be a particular value to within 10 to minus 2 or something inside the
base. Yeah. So okay, what you can, for example, show is if you would add a, I think it's x squared h squared term, this sometimes can have a direct impact on the propagation. So essentially anything which affects the Kähler metric of x during inflation can have a principle and impact on this stuff. If you would have, in this scenario, the inflaton potential is flat at tree level, and we'll show you it's going to be the slope is driven by the one-node corrections.
And if I have an x squared h squared term, that's not going to be what I'm
saying? It is going to, not going to give a tree-level contribution, for example, but it's going to affect the one-node corrections directly.
How about like a row x squared? You've got a row x squared term already.
Yeah. Row x squared is fine. I think anything which depends only on row is okay. If you add a phi squared whatever term, then it is probably not a good idea. Does it answer your question?
I'm not sure. Okay. I, I have to rely on you to tell me what choices are you making, and then I have intuition myself as to how sensitive things are. But I understand your answer is that you're saying...
I mean, if you would, for example, add a phi squared term here, then this will completely ruin your model.
Yeah, but I know those rules are that you have to involve row only because...
Indeed. As long as you do that, you should be fine.
And the loop thing from HX is not tuned because the loop factor is safe.
Yeah, it's not too much tuned. I mean, in this setup, the point is the loop corrections on the edge are precisely this form because you get a splitting from supersymmetry breaking, this comes from the first term. So this is just the first term here coming from this, and you have a supersymmetric mass from this term. And so this waterfall sector H always contributes to the common Riemann potential. And in principle, you could also have contributions from the gauge sector in the sec, because now phi is in principle charged. So this small phi just parameterizes the deflect direction. And the point is, first of all, what is tricky here is the inverton itself is actually, because it's deflect direction, it's actually a gauge singlet under the unbroken gauge group, but it's charged under gauge fields which acquire a mass. Gets set by basically gauge coupling and the VF of phi. And the question whether the gauge sector contributes to the one-loop potential or not depends on what the supergravity Gugino masses is. Because the mass splitting in the gauge sector is essentially given by this term, by the direct supergravity mass term for the Gugino. And so, we use W, X, and all F terms except the one of X as small expansion parameters. And then you can show that in the limit where you set all of at leading order in these parameters, the splitting vanishes if the gauge kinetic function does not depend on the field which gets an F term. this is probably quite easy to arrange for this. For example, if you have universal Gugino masses, this will always be the case. This is not zero. So unless in special models, you could say the gauge sector contribution to the one-loop potential is always negligible. So this has been pointed out a few years ago. Let's add an additional problem if you have a field phi which is charged under something. Because in principle, you should have to worry about two-loop corrections. And so the claim goes like this. You have a gauge singlet, non-singlet field phi, and superpotential couplings which are precisely of the form which we consider. Then from the gauge interactions, you will get a contribution to the mass of the infra of the phi of this order. From all the fields which are from loops diagrams which precisely look like this below here, and in principle this easily leads to an eta problem, because this is only suppressed by the mass of the fields and not by the Planck mass. Depending on what the gauge coupling is, you more or less immediately run into a problem. But the point is that this formula is derived assuming that the gauge fields are massless. So in our case, they will have to add include the mass term, and what do you get? So you get an extra suppression of this, and you can show that in the end the contribution to the eta parameter is suppressed by kappa squared times the loop factor, and kappa has to be small anyway for phenomenological reasons. So this is definitely not a problem in our case. So the next step, which we now took in this direction, is to make the model look more complicated, much more complicated actually. We introduced a bunch of new fields. So now all the coefficients in the superpotential are by assumptions function of a set of three fields, modular fields Ti. And we generalized also before we had here phi phi c, but we will generalize this to something more general, which simply has to be a deflect direction by itself. We also considered now non-canonical terms in the Kähler potential. But in principle, everything works more or less the same as before. All of these exponents here are some model-dependent fractional numbers, which you can state is something between 0 and 1. So what this function f, which tells you how large the supersymmetric mass for the waterfall fields is. It is just some D-flat direction, so it's a gauge invariant product of the phis, of some set of phis. The easiest example is just think of n times n bar in SUN, or probably more interesting for what we want to do later is think of it as just a triple product of 27ths in E6. Each of this gives you a gauge non-singlet, and so in principle a D-flat direction. So now, I told you before that that we need this gamma x to the fourth term here, and the reason why we need this, it's just written this way. The reason why we need this is to stabilize the field x at a sufficiently large mass. And this also has a nice geometric interpretation from the work of all these people here, because if you under these two assumptions that these two fields are relevant, then you can immediately show that in order to have a de Sitter minimum, then the curvature along the x direction has to be negative. Okay, as I said, we have modular dependent non-kinetic terms, which depend on all the t's, and we will make basically the assumption that these superpotential couplings, all of them, go as e to the minus at for some coefficient a. And also, one thing is that we replace, before that in the model, we put in the scale m here by hand. So the f term was set by hand. Now we want to change this and set it dynamically.
What motivates that?
That is just what happens. If we want to do later, argue that this is suitable to embed it into hydraulic orbifolds, and there precisely disappears. Because there, the modular weights for the fields are typically lie somewhere between 0 and 1 and are some fractional number. It's just what you can show to be the structural energy structure.
And that relies on the thing that you're calling being at a orbifold point, so being
the twisted sector. Yeah. In the untwisted sector, only one of these is 1 and the others are 0. But for the twisted fields, in principle, all of them can be some number, no, some fractional number. Yeah. Exactly. Sorry. Okay. So.
I'm afraid on the motivation, you know, the De Sitter vacua is the late time end of inflation De Sitter vacua, or this is like pseudo vacuum, just the fact that you have.
This is a pseudo vacuum before adjustments. I mean, this is not going. Yeah. I mean, this is also, this is the point is. Yeah, but we want basically want this De Sitter vacuum to be stable with respect to all directions except the phi. So. Now, the point is that because of the structure of the theory, any leverage will induce typically will carry some modular dependence. So the modular dependence from the non-canonical kinetic terms enters when we want to generate D-term lefs. And so this is, if you have an anomalous U1, you would typically have an Vi-term generated. And all the fields charged under this anomalous U1 will get a... can in principle get a VEF. The simplest solution to ensure D-flatness is to give just one of those fields a VEF of this order, which has precisely the opposite charge with the opposite sign as the Fi term psi. But in principle, the more general solutions is actually to give any product of fields a VEF, which has a in sum a non-zero charge opposite to the sign of psi. And this is actually pretty important that you can that you, the D-terms cannot can give VEFs to many fields, not just one. But in principle, if you do this, the relative size of the VEFs can only be fixed if they are charged under additional gauge symmetries. This because then that fixes the relative size of the VEFs. Okay. But even more important for our case is that also the F-term induced VEFs can have a modular dependence. And so a simple example involves the fields phi and psi, etc., are assumed to get VEFs via a D-term. So those are non-zero. And X is the field we had before. And psi is an additional, psi is the field which gets a VEF via an F-term. And you can show that with this setup, and the psi field gets some modular dependence which centrally depends on the modular dependence of this form. Actually, I could have added here some e to the minus c dependence, but it doesn't really enter into the VEF of xi. So it depends only on the relative length of this term. so in the end, what we do is we parameterize the modular dependence of the feed switch of this psi in this form with some coefficients, some numbers pi and bi in a suitable range. And interestingly, there exists a non-zero set of possibilities where you can stabilize all the modular during inflation, which is important because until now we only had stabilized the runaway in the x direction, but the presence of the additional fields gives you much more directions where the field could run away instead of the amplitude direction. so we can show that as long as the as a product of this function A, which is and psi has goes as some e to the we want to avoid that this goes as so you have to impose the requirement that this does not involve T3, this product of the fields and super potential. This is a necessary requirement, and we have to basically impose this by hand because the reason is that if you let her argue that the symmetry is not to be expected to be preserved by the super potential, which is already evident from the fact that it involves T and T bar and phi and phi bar, and is so far not holomorphic. And this function D, which enters into the Keller metric of X, as of this form again, and then you can see that you can, in principle, as long as all these numbers here are larger than zero, you could generate a minimum. And the minimum for rho is exactly at roughly given by the order of 1 over this coefficient beta here. And there's one common order because this potential here can cannot be the full approximation over the entire space because this will have a pole in the potential. And that this pole arises at exactly the point where the two derivative kinetic term for x vanishes. So at some point, I mean, you shouldn't take this line here serious, but at some point, even before you reach this pole, you can no longer trust this approximation in principle.
Sorry, can you just say that again?
So, the pole is that this pole is because. Let me get back. So this here is the Keller potential for x, and the kinetic term, the prefect of the kinetic term is just essentially if x is zero. Just these two things. And the pole arises at exactly the point when this goes to zero. Because the F time potential is, in our case, proportional to 1 over the Keller metric of X. And this is the same quantity which appears in the kinetic term.
So what are the rules now? So that previously the argument was that you had the symmetry which made the and then you're probably getting it with an idea of heading towards the more
stringy
things. And the choices you're making, the symmetries you have in the Keller function are being broken in the superpotential.
Yes.
They're only in the superpotential.
Yeah.
So the rules are that you write the most general Keller function consistent with the symmetries, and then the superpotentials are it looks like they're exponential, so your mesh is non-trivial because of something else.
Yeah. Yes.
But are you being completely general in the choices you're making for these functions, like A of T and that kind of stuff, that are consistent with the symmetries, or are you making specific choices?
I make a specific choice for one term, for the F, this series besides the F term of X, and I want this to for this first quantity. And I want this to be, I have to track, in principle, if I make sort of a model, I have to track the modular dependence of the VEF, and I want the end product to be independent of T3. Otherwise, I would induce a large trivial breaking of the symmetry.
Okay.
And the idea is to have something which conserves the symmetry at tree level and it only gets broken by corrections which you can add.
And those corrections are not disturbed, they're not really thinking that you may not have heard of it at the end of the day.
They can be. Yeah. I mean, they're both perturbative and non-perturbative corrections. The perturbative ones are basically look like the common Weinberg thing, and they're probably not dangerous. But, basic thing is you know from the shift symmetry that the inspection from stringy perspective is that T enters the superpotential only as e to the minus T. But also you as I will argue later, you can show that you don't expect the superpotential to preserve the symmetry. The idea is indeed that you would expect that the symmetry is only broken by non-perturbative effects, naively. As long as you keep sufficiently large number of fields of zero. I will come to that later. Back to symmetry. Okay. So first of all, I want to now argue that this has something to do with heterotic strings. And so heterotic strings theory is a theory of closed strings, and most interestingly, it contains a gauge group, even though it's made of closed strings. But you also have to compactify the things. And the kind of easiest things you can look at are so-called orbifolds, which essentially means you take a six-dimensional torus, so just three donuts, and mod out some discrete symmetry, identify thing. And then you can have two classes of, and then strings can be divided into two categories. Strings which were closed already on the full six-dimensional torus, and sums which are only closed up to some discrete identifications, and those are these untwisted states, and the twisted states are those ones which are only closed upon making this identification. And what is probably a more intuitive picture for this is the untwisted states correspond to stuff which propagates in the full 10-dimensional bulk, and the twisted states correspond to stuff living on either 4-dimensional or 6-dimensional brains. I mean, there are some two types of twisted states which you can have. That's a basic picture. And okay, the reason why we looked at this stuff is that because it has been shown that there exist models where you can get sufficiently close to the MSSM. A bunch of people were basically around the Bond group. And also, all of these models, all of the viable models of this class, contain an anomalous U1. And it can be shown that only if in the case of an anomalous U1, you can have an FI term, which is needed to induce VAFs in the first place. The reason is that that the superpotential in these heterotic models starts at cubic order in the matter fields. So unless we induce some Fs, none of these fields gets an F term. And so the field content in this model also in principle matches nicely because you always generically get three Kenner moduli, which basically tell you if you split this torus as T2 times T2 times T2, they give you the size of each of these tori. And we will, each of these Kenner moduli comes with some untwisted matter fields. And we will put the X field into a twisted sector. The reason is that for the untwisted matter fields, you probably don't find a negative X to the fourth term. So you won't get a stable Bessita vacuum during inflation. Sufficiently stable. There's one drawback at this point, because the point is typically you will have to get VAFs to twisted matter fields, and it's been argued that this is in principle means that you have to blow up some of the singularities because these orbifolds come with some point-like singularities which are the fixed points, which are not identified with themselves under this, for example, the six symmetry. And if you give VAFs to twisted matter fields, you typically end up with having to smooth those out. And this is a bit of a drawback because people like these orbifolds for one reason, namely that you can do exact string computations on them because they have a rather simple theory on the worksheet. But this is an unsolved problem and it's not yet clear how to do this at all. There's some progress recently. So we will essentially make some assumptions on the curve which we can compute and hope that it works out fine. My main reason for choosing this heterotic orbifolds is because you get the Heisenberg symmetry at the tree level for all of the untwisted matter fields. And the reason is, in the case that no matter fields are present, the definition of the modular fields TI goes as follows. You take a symmetric, the R squared is just the volume of a two torus, and in addition you can put on a two-form field, BMN around, and this can have a certain value inside this two torus. You can put a certain flux on this torus, and this gives us the imaginary part of the Kenner moduli. And if you switch on whereas for the untwisted meta fields, you can show that you have to redefine the KNN modula according to this structure. And the reason why the symmetry then arises is that the KNN potential at tree level is still given by the log of the volume. And the volume involves precisely the combination, which is t plus t bar minus phi squared. So volume is r, involves r squared only. And so the now comes. If you look at where the symmetry arises in the low energy effective action, you can go to 10 dimensions, and then the untwisted meta fields phi are associated to components of the of gauge fields along in the xy dimension. And in the limit where you switch this gauge coupling to zero, an additional symmetry pops up for the kinetic term because you can are allowed now allowed to add an harmonic form to the gauge field. And if in addition you have to transform this two-form field, gauge potential. But then this is the symmetry of your action. And you can also show that the limit where you switch off this gauge coupling precisely corresponds to the limit where you set the superpotential to zero. So what you have is a symmetry which is present in the KNN potential, which is responsible for the kinetic terms, but gets broken by the superpotential in principle. So, and it has also been shown that this is an accidental symmetry from the world sheet picture, as long as you keep the field value sufficiently small. So, before I come to discuss the superpotential, there's one thing which constrains the entire structure of the theory. There's this thing called target space moduli invariance. What this means is that each of the moduli enjoys a symmetry of this type, which is an asset to C transformation. Because all of these coefficients are just some integers, and each of these, this has to be a symmetry of the full action. So at tree level, this means that the KNN potential is not invariant by itself. It can be easily seen, because the KNN potential for each of these t's goes as log t plus t bar, because it should depend only on the volume of the corresponding torus. And then to make supergravity action invariant, you can immediately show that the superpotential also has to transform, and you have one of these symmetries for each of the KNN moduli. In addition, all of the meta fields will transform generically. And these are actually precisely the same numbers which appeared also before in the kinetic term, in the KNN potential. This is a way how to determine this. These numbers and they essentially depend on how you embed this, the action of this discrete symmetry on the torus. So this can typically be computed for at least with respect to the three general KNN moduli. And then you can show that the generic term in superpotential, which is invariant, has precisely this structure. So this here is because the point is this eta, this is a conventional parametrization. this function is essentially it goes as e to the minus t at t larger than 1, the real part of t larger than 1. You can think of this as summing up a bunch of non-conservative corrections. So whenever, so in principle, if you look at this, depending on what powers you consider and what charges you have under the symmetry, all the couplings in the superpotential will either start with a 1 plus e to the minus t or just with e to the minus t. And the first ones are those which can be present perturbatively, and the last ones are always non-perturbative in nature. And okay, the more meta fields you put together, the more likely it is that you have something which is non-perturbative necessarily, simply because this number here will grow and grow. okay, and I forgot to put here in the minimum number of fields which meta fields which can appear is 3. Okay, and this is just a rule of thumb. So in principle, it could happen that by accident some of these couplings is just not present. That this is something which is very model dependent. In general, you would expect all of them to be true, to be there, and with order one coefficients in unit of the string scale. Okay. One thing which makes this setup much more complicated if you add it to the adiabatic string is that you get an additional modulus to the one we had before, and namely this is a dilaton, and during inflation, we have to stabilize those by non-perturbative corrections to the KNN potential. There's a scheme which is called KNN stabilization. It's been worked out by a bunch of people. And essentially, it relies on the fact that you can have worksheet instanton corrections which not go as the usual e to the minus 1 over g squared, but as e to the minus 1 over g. And yeah, so in principle, you would have to add those terms, and you can also take into account some of the perturbative fractions you know, and this can lead to a minimum, as we will see in a minute. What makes this?
This is that I find.
Yeah.
I remember when this passed by in the 90s, and I must say I'm not sure I'm remembering it right, but I remember the story was that Shanker and company were arguing that these things had these e to the minus 1 over g's that would be there. That was before they had discovered deep brains, and then that the deep brains, in the end of the day, were the e to the minus 1 over g's that they had been saying had to be there at general grounds. And what I remember is the moral of the story was these e to the minus 1 over g rather than g squares were, because people didn't know deep brains existed, that deep brains were the manifestation of these things. Does that sound familiar? Is that
something right?
Not sure.
Well, I guess it's, I'm trying to remember whether deep brains were just the most prominent example or not. I don't know whether all the examples of time
could be the most prominent example.
Yeah.
Okay,
sorry,
I
think
that
no. I have to look into this, probably. Okay. You know, and yet, for example, the only thing which you could imagine to be like this is take NS5 prime, in principle.
Yeah,
but this is, me neither, and at the end, Okay. The downside is, having the diagram around is that the FI parameter, which you introduce, arises as a one loop correction and goes suppressed as 1 over S plus S bar. And this affects the modular dependence of all the VEFs. So any D term driven VEF will necessarily go as some inverse power. And so in principle, all these D term VEFs act destabilizing, but the F term VEFs are induced involving some inverse powers of D term VEFs, and so they can act stabilizing. In the end, one has to make use of this fact. So the Kellner modular stabilization in the setup essentially works as what we did before, because we have to make sure that the VEFs which arise involve just which sets the scale of the F term of X involves just T1 and T2 by precisely this combination. There's some additional tuning which we have to impose to not violate the symmetry immediately at tree level. And then everything works for these works as before. And so for T3 and phi, because we have to avoid the superpotential stabilization, because we do not expect the symmetry to be respected at all. And so this means we don't want to give any of these an NF term effectively. So the alternatives which you in principle have are alpha prime corrections, or the threshold corrections to the Kellner metric. And the reason is because we want something which depends mostly, which essentially depends only on the radius of the torus. And, we didn't use alpha prime corrections because the point is that you cannot really go to an extremely large volume in the adiabatic string. So it's not immediately clear that you're allowed to take only this leading contribution and can neglect all the others. So we went for the second one, which is also more similar to what we had before. There's one combination for computation which has been done for a special type of orbifolds in the limit where he set all matter fields to zero. And they can show that the modular dependence of this correction involves an expansion at large t, which corresponds to large radius of the torus, involves only the combination t plus t bar. So it depends only on the radius. Which seems to be precisely what we want. So far we haven't been able to show that this depends only on the only on the combination rho in some approximation, but we will make that, you can make that assumption, and then the model works pretty nicely. So the reason why I have some hope that this that these corrections in principle depend preserve the symmetry to some amount, because before they preserve the shift symmetry related to T, which it has a non-zero commutator with the symmetry transforming the phis. And so we might expect that the symmetry is not too badly broken. For example, if it gets broken by something which is suppressed by e to the minus t, then you're probably fine in this setup. Yeah. Okay. So how does the potentials look like which you get? So this one is the potential for the combination which is essentially the rho we had before. And this looks pretty much the same as we had before, except for that another pole appears here. But in principle, that is also expected, because you probably would not expect to trust the theory if your value of t gets sufficiently below 1, because then you're no longer in the supergravity regime. And huh? Yeah. No, this is an arbitrary unit, actually. Yeah. I'm sorry. I should have removed the units. Yeah, this is up to an overall rescaling of the units.
So I'm just trying to get this around. So what's the overall scale? What does it go with? It's the volume of the compact torus?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you can trust these numbers here, right? If that's your question.
Well, I'm just...
Okay.
Yeah, you should have some dimensions.
Okay, so
it's... some sense of the scale here.
It goes with the volume in string units. And then also, it goes with the vast sum of the metafields, which are around the string scale or slightly below that. And then also some modular dependent couplings. And
are you worried that the bottom left curves and, like, is minimized for small values of real
field? No. Actually, not too much, I think. In principle, yes. But I'm not really sure how far one can trust the curve in this regime here. Because if t gets too small, then you cannot trust the supergravity calculation anyway.
So then this means that you do trust it to the right, where there's no minimum, and you're
driven
down to where
you can trust it. Actually, there is a minimum around here. It's just hard to see, actually. But
if you're in a place, if you start rolling in that direction, what are the rules? You're going to sit T at that minimum,
yeah.
And then hope it doesn't get kicked out, or during what is supposed to roll through it and not roll past it.
I think I would actually have to make the extra assumption on the dynamics before the actual inflation starts that it ends up in this minimum. And
where is it? Actually, you can't see it there. Is it a 2 or a 3 or 4?
It's at 1 point something, 1.2 or so. This plot is probably not so nice. I mean, actually, the point is if you look at the full eta function, then you can show the minimum is always at order 1. But this is, I think it's probably pretty hard to plot this Mathematica.
Is that a concern?
In principle, it is a concern, because you would like to have all of the t's stabilized at much larger than 1. Some supergravity approximation gets, in principle, better. It's like a 1 over volume expander. So, but in principle, I'm also worried about all the kind of alpha prime corrections. But these are particularly hard to compute because you cannot do this expansion in the partial volume. Yeah. It's pretty. In principle, there's a big problem. And also see, pretty nice that even with this stabilizing. So the order volume is basically the product of those two moduli. And even if in the scheme you cannot really get really large volume, because as soon as one of the volume becomes too large, the minimum for the dilaton goes away immediately. Yeah, that is the main problem in the adiabatic string because that is a big thing, and this is unfortunately hard to overcome. And in principle, it's not really clear to which extent you can really, really trust a supergravity calculation. That is why some people just trying to develop new tools, which also, I think, goes in the direction of using gauge linear sigma models as some kind of handle on this. But in principle, it's not clear how to compute this stuff really reliable. It's not yet settled. So that is indeed a drawback. Now, the most important thing what we need now is I haven't talked about how to generate this log for the infoton potential. And the reason is that, that depends on whether which source gives you the slope depends on whether the threshold corrections actually can be made can preserve the symmetry to a sufficient amount or not. So at first we assume that you can do this, and then all of the extra terms which we essentially neglected can in principle give you a slope, but which is automatically small, because then, for example, if you add a Gugino condensate, which will always be present typically, this essentially gives you a correction of the form that the VEF of W is non-zero, which we assumed so far, and then you get a small expansion parameter, which is the VEF of W over the F term of X, and this goes on so for all of these types of corrections. And what we want to start now is actually try to check whether when one can abandon the assumption that these coefficients, these things are really small, and check whether there are some non-trivial cancellations in principle, in a statistical sense, analogously to what you can do for D-brand inflation models. Also, what in principle should be included in the list is that we haven't done a stabilization of the complex structure moduli explicitly. You might expect there's also some corrections coming from that point of view. And also, something even more challenging is to turn on fluxes in heterotic backgrounds. But this gets even more complicated. But in principle, you would. I think that if you might expect that even in the presence of fluxes, the symmetry should be present at to some extent to leading order, because the main expectation is that the tree level action still depends only on the log of the volume. So another point, which is from interesting phonologically, is we assume that by construction that in this particular one modulus, namely the T3, is stabilized during inflation and after inflation by two completely different mechanisms. That is to do with the fact that during inflation, the whole modular stabilization is ensured that we have a non-zero F term for some of the meta fields, but this will be gone after the phase transition. And then other terms will take over. The probably most relevant candidate is typically the Gugino condensate. Then you have a bunch of issues which can pop up. For example, you can vary it about some version of the cosmological modular problem originating from this, or simply an overshooting problem that you might not reach the minimum after inflation and just shoot over. And also, you can also wonder whether reading proceeds mostly through modular decays or through decays of the meta fields. And this is still preliminary, but we have done some simulations in a simplified toy model with just four fields to make it more tractable. And the results we have so far, it seems that the first two problems can only be avoided by making some fine-tuning, because there doesn't seem to be a generic mechanism to avoid them. So one has to do some fine-tuning. We're still trying to estimate how large it has to be. And in addition, something which is interesting because the models we considered, the things that we considered in this climb model, essentially ended up such that the modulus mass after was always the lightest field after inflation. So it was the one which oscillated the longest. And this means that the reheating essentially proceeds mostly through the moduli, which is perhaps not so nice considering the original goal, what we had, because we would like, from the idea to realize inflation in the matter sector is to probably also have reheating from the matter sector. And so probably some part of that idea goes away. But it depends. I've also talked to some, it's not so clear whether this is always the case or just because of the simple model we looked at. You might think about having a more complicated model where you can stabilize the T at a very, very large mass in principle. Okay, I think that's all my conclusions. So I've presented you a framework for what we termed matter inflation, which I think is phenomenologically very interesting. And I try to argue that this is very promising to embed this in erotic compactifications. And an interesting feature of this is that it really needs to necessarily stabilize the moduli during and after inflation by two different mechanisms. So this could be an interesting interesting signature. And what is still left open is really an explicit realization in a very concrete model. And the main obstacle towards this is, I think, better understanding of the modular stabilization, in particular of how to really fix a dilaton. And then also we want to look in more detail into the issues of reheating and stuff related to this. So thanks for your attention.
So recently, the other at LMU, I forget who, but there was a group.
James Quinn.
Yeah, James was studying these heterotic compactifications and actually was getting examples of the other. Have you looked at how this is compatible with those explicit schemes?
I haven't looked at this yet. But I think it goes in kind of the same direction. I think in principle they're doing something similar as what is done in the Orbifold. I think it's just more technically more involved on the Calabi-Yaus, which they consider. Mm-hmm. But what they also do is, and I think what they always do is to switch on Wilson lines. And I think in principle you have to, I think from the Orbifold models, I expect to have some kind of tension between the framework we considered in the MSSM-like models, because these models always work by trying to remove as much as possible from the bulk. So even having a deflapped direction of untwisted matter fields in one of these models is already a non-trivial requirement. And I mean, we haven't looked at this in too much detail, but it might be that there is actually a non-zero overlap or nothing at all. It depends.
Are there constraints from this sort of altered reheating scenario from cosmology that can be relevant here? So having this, I mean, so you have this picture where the modulus is oscillating and you get this matter-dominated epoch and then you dump it into the other stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess without a more concrete model of what you dump it into, maybe you can't say so much?
I think what you dump it into, it just couples university to everything, as one of our Planck suppressed.
Okay.
I mean, it's more or less Planck suppressed because you don't get a large hierarchy here because we don't have large volume of things like this. So it's more or less Planck suppressed. So I think you run into the same problems which you all typically also have. I wouldn't expect it is too much changed, unfortunately.
Next question.